Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HR Latte, your first cup of talent management whipped to perfection. Hey, everybody, welcome to HR Latte. This is Rayanne Thorne, your host. We're here every Thursday talking about things that are going on in HR and in recruitment. I am so happy to include this guest today, Lisa Scales. I met Lisa several years ago in London, and she's one of those brief or encounters in your life that you never forget and that you hope you maintain a relationship with. that you maintain that relationship for quite some time. This month I am focusing my series on the UK connection, and Lisa is very well known in the UK and in North America as an expert in her field. She is the founder of a co-founder of a company called A Tribe Pad, and we're going to learn a little bit more about that. But before we kick off this quick hit show, which I love, HR Latte, I'm going to give Lisa an opportunity to introduce herself, and then we'll jump right in. I'm a little bit out of breath and hesitating this morning because Lisa just called in. I didn't have a chance to talk to her before, and I wasn't sure if she was going to make it. So that giggle that you heard in the background was the first noise I heard from Lisa as well. So, Lisa, thanks for – I'm so glad you were able to get through. Thanks for joining me.
You on the fly, Rayanne. Yeah, sorry.
Apparently. Well, I can do that, so no worries. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, well, apologies for the late attendance, given the fact that I was actually just talking to a client, and I had to cut our call quite short and say, I'm sorry, but I'm just about to go on the radio. So thank you, Rayanne, and thank you for inviting me. Let me tell you a little bit about myself. I am, I suppose I'm an old-school recruiter by trade. I've worked in HR and recruitment. I've worked both in-house and agency side. So I suppose I can see it from quite a few sides of the fence in terms of challenges and how organizations operate. So, as I said, my background is HR and recruitment. I set up TribePad almost 7 years ago now, and got together with some cleverer people than myself to build out a technology platform. With the sole intent of disrupting a market and changing a market that was long overdue a need for change in terms of how people are recruiting. And I think that's probably the premise of where I come from in terms of, you know, the behavior of a recruiter has changed remarkably over the last at least 10 years. And with that, technology has moved and is constantly moving. So we're like, it's like walking through sand. That's me.
Well, Lisa, thank you for taking time out of your schedule. And of course, it's far more important for you to finish up a call with a client than to be here on time, but that's okay. So I'm excited to get your perspective on some questions that I've been asking a few of my guests, but also some new questions that as we take a look at the differences between the U.S. or North America and the U.K., in particular, what do you think the biggest difference is in our recruiting practices or what's going on in the world of recruitment today between the U.K. and North America or U.S.?
Yeah, I think although I haven't actively recruited in the U.S., and I'll split this question into a couple of segments in terms of if I'm looking at the recruitment industry in general from a North America versus the U.K., we live on a tiny island, which is awash with recruitment agencies. I think at last count there was something like 14,000. Give or take a few, and servicing a population of approximately 60 million. What that gives you is concentration, which gives you high a lot of competitiveness. The difference, obviously, with the U.S., if you take, for example, just to give it some scale and comparity, Texas, there's 29 million in the state of Texas alone. So all of a sudden, the difference, massive difference you've got is scale.
Right.
And I think the thing about the U.S. is that every state generally becomes a country in itself. And with that, you become recruiting actually gets more localized as opposed to bigger, because there's so much out there with you guys comparative to our marketplace, where if somebody said to you, give me the top 10 people that are recruiting in the HR space, you could probably reel them off because you know who the... I'm getting feedback on that. Sorry. We're in a small market, but a very crowded market. If you look at recruitment in terms of process and actually somebody going through a recruitment process with an organization, I think there's probably quite a lot of compliancy in the States with affirmative action and the regulations that you have to abide by, which I know is very stringent. We're probably a little looser over here in terms of that. Yes, we've got data protection stuff going on and whatever, but actually I think that the recruitment market in the States is probably a little bit more compliant, if I dare say so. The second sort of answer I wanted to give was actually probably the market I know better, in the sense of the recruitment software market. Buyers in the States are a different breed to buyers in the UK and Europe, and it's really interesting. I think that buyers in the States don't generally major on cost and price before they understand value. I think that, you know, if you're in the US, you want to understand the value of something before you ask about the price. Over here, very, very price-driven and conscious of that. So that would be the major difference I see in how somebody approaches the purchase of software. I think that's about it, really.
Great. So let's move forward now and talk about your company, TribePad. You classify it as a social ATS, applicant tracking system. So let's talk a little bit about that, the product, the service you provide, and let's look at the next year for TribePad and what it holds for you. So if you could tell us about TribePad, what makes it different, what makes it unique?
As I say, the business set up about 7 years ago. TribePad actually came to fruition probably about 3 or 4 years ago. And we've coined this phrase, the social ATS, and we do get a lot of people saying, so you do social recruiting. To me, that phrase is a little bit gone, and it doesn't really make any sense, because I think anything online now can be social, and also I wouldn't necessarily say that social recruiting is a phrase. What we talk about with regards to TribePad and how we position it as a social ATS, I talk about push and pull, and the push out to social distribution channels, fine. That to me is about content distribution. That's nothing about a candidate going onto Twitter and looking for a job. Why would you do that when you can go to Monster and do a job search? There's some positioning there. But my thought about it, which would make me think of something as being truly social, is giving a recruiter tools to be able to start communicating and conversing with a candidate pre-application, post-application, or even somebody that's a passive candidate. So most of the legacy ATS systems out there have ability to transact and take a candidate through a status-changing process. What we're trying to do is service the needs of a recruiter that has to deal with the maybes and maybe in 6 months' times, as well as candidates that maybe have been through the process but haven't been successful that particular role and are looked at for another role. So I just think that it's not a binary process, is recruitment, and there are so many different levels and layers to it that a recruiter these days needs to have the tools at their fingertips in the same platform to be able to do all those things as well.
So, I would agree, and excited to hear more. Tell us what the next year holds for you.
Yeah, so
any new changes, growth?
Yeah, well, we are growing rapidly. I think what we've done is find ourselves with a platform that thankfully, and actually we take quite a different approach in terms of how we sort of push forward our roadmap in terms of our own plans, and they're very much customer led. And we're more about solving people's problems as opposed to just bringing out bling. That's going to be hashtagged, isn't it? Bringing out the bling.
Yeah, bringing out the bling.
we're not doing that. Solving customer problems is to us a smarter way of growing a business and getting referrals than actually just bringing out products for the sake of it. So. The year ahead, we've got some really exciting stuff happening. We've just rebuilt our analytics suite and MIS platform, which is taking data to the next level. We've got some interesting developments around the semantic search engine, which sits within Tripad. So there's some stuff that's going to make a recruiter's life easier, and that's where we always have to get back to. It's very easy for people to get excited about stuff, but if somebody's not going to use it, no point.
Right.
So we've got to think about the recruiter at their desk who's got a hiring manager in their right ear, and they've got their own boss in their other ear, and they've got candidates coming out their ears. So it's a case of building and pushing a product forward for the user base.
Do you have users in the US?
We do, yes. We have quite a large volume in the US, in North America and in South America. Being multilingual, it helps in the South American states. And Tripad's got OFCCP compliancy over the top of it, so it's fully compliant for the US market.
That's great. And are you geared for small to medium companies, or are you scalable to any size organization?
Yeah, it's interesting, actually. So some of the clients we find ourselves with are massive organizations, and I think that puts you into a bucket where people think you are. But interestingly, and they only sort of remember the brand names of the large ones that we have
right.
as clients. However, you know, we've got small to medium sized businesses as well. So we have, I suppose, our tier one enterprise level clients, and then we have tier two clients, which literally do range from, you know, 500 employees right up to our largest client has 750,000 employees. So it
right.
really does
so
cross
you,
the whole board.
Yeah, and you've got a great deal of experience in the last 7 to 10 years. We've seen in extensive changes in technology and rapid development. So when you consider HR tech vendors like yourself, organizations that are providing a technology and a service, a product for a specific group, a specific industry, like recruiters or HR professionals, what
yeah.
mistakes do you think those vendors are making today? And are there any that are particular to the UK that you know of?
Yeah, okay. I don't think... I can only speak anecdotally about what others are doing from my clients and whatever, and prospective clients. And I don't think in any way the issues are sort of geographical, in terms of there's no specific mistakes people are making in the UK versus the US or Asia. I actually think the biggest mistake we as an industry fall foul of quite a lot is providing bad service, and the amount of people that approach me about changing providers due to being thrown a platform and not being given any support and assistance going forward,
right.
which is the easiest thing to do. so So I think over-promising and under-delivering on service is a key thing that a lot of the HR tech vendors are possibly missing out. And so to me, cloud-based, on-premise, whatever type of platform you go out and procure, actually, that's just the start of the journey, in my opinion. And you know, having customers that are happy is a lot easier than having customers that are unhappy and leaving you.
That's for sure, and it all starts with listening, which is part of a good sales process, is really understanding the needs. And you hit on that, you know, solving customer problems. There's, you know, the train of thought that if you aren't solving problems, you're creating them, and that is most certainly true with an HR tech company, right? It's already a hard enough job to begin with to try and track and take care of customers or candidates, but to throw on top of it the disaster that sometimes a technology company can be with the training and the changes that take place or the product breaking down and not being able to reach customer service. I like what you're saying, and I'm hoping that more and more organizations are going to be moving in that direction about listening to the, really listening to the client and understanding their problems. This last month, in February. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, sorry, Ryan.
That's okay.
I think there's some history and there's some legacy there. And actually, I think what people do, and I would I would blame the entire global economy for this, in terms of shareholders, share price, growth of businesses, first to market, market grab, market share. Actually, businesses try and scale. It's very hard to scale a business where you're supporting as well. So, A, you've got to build a good product that's got good UI and enables you to solve your own problems as a user. But B is also actually being able to push back and go, as a business, we can't handle this at the moment. So if we take you on, we're going to end up giving you a bad experience. So we'd rather not, because reputation is everything. Also, all too many would take that attitude of growth, growth, growth. Well, actually, sometimes it can be really, growth which isn't smart.
That's right. That's right. So February, I focused on the candidate experience. It's something that we've been discussing for the last 10 years, right? And recruiters and HR professionals, it seems to be something that we consistently talk about and try to address, but it still is a bad candidate experience is still in existence. And actually, everybody that I've asked about it has said that it's worse now than it was. And a lot of that has to do with technology that's available. Can you tell me about what's being done about the candidate experience in the UK and what your thoughts are about why we just can't seem to solve the problem?
Yeah, and I think firstly it's if the industry as a whole defined what candidate experience was in terms of the recruitment process and pre-hire and onboard, etc. And I was asked this question the other day, actually, about candidate experience. And I was at the Candidate Experience Awards in the UK the other evening. I think you're right. I think there is still I think the problem has been compounded by technology, given the fact that...
Yes.
Candidates can be very click happy these days in terms of application. Their expectation as a candidate, because human beings inherently haven't changed, is that they're expecting a response to every job advert that they apply for. There should be no reason why they don't get one. In terms of fixing it, I can only speak for how we do things as opposed to the industry as a whole, because actually that's a larger question. And I think a description of what bad candidate experience is and good is, then what does good look like? And I think it depends on your organization and it depends on the size and what you're trying to achieve. We work with a lot of retailers. Candidate experience is absolutely key because this is about potential consumers as well. So giving somebody a bad experience means they may not walk into the shop off the street and buy your products. That affects bottom line, and ultimately I always talk about death by a thousand cuts. You might not see it from the odd one candidate, but, you know, if you continue to give poor experience, people are down at the pub talking, you know, in a negative way about your brand.
Go right ahead.
Yeah, so my thoughts on the candidate experience, yes, it's broken. Yes, it needs fixing in terms of how an organization can go about improving their own candidate experience. It's weird, actually, because I think a lot of organizations worry about over-communication and you know, worry about sort of they don't actually think about the candidate as being a you know, somebody sat there looking for a job. They just think about them as a number, and actually it's just about sending a communication saying, look, sorry we haven't got back to you yet, we're inundated, we'll come back to you within the next 10 days. It's expectation management. That's all it is.
That's the truth. And I think the more that we say, look, you're affecting your employment brand by providing a bad candidate experience. And in the end, it affects your consumer brand. Like you stated, people are not going to walk into your organization. They're not going to even seek you out online if they have a bad experience. And they're going to tell people about it. So let's talk about how your organization is addressing this. Is there anything special that you're doing to affect candidate experience and hopefully make it better?
Well, it's an interesting one because the way that a candidate comes into the Tripad platform from a career site where they've searched for a job or they've found it on Twitter or whatever, Facebook or wherever it is, the process the candidate needs to go through is they do need to create their profile and upload a CV which is parsed, or they can pull across their LinkedIn data. And you would think that actually, do you know what, the journey the candidate needs to go on to get to the job they've applied for is a slower process than doing a one-click apply. I don't mind if a candidate does a little bit of work to get through to a job. What I do mind is if the company doesn't respond to that person's application, and I don't mind about automated responses. I just want one sort of response. So in terms of how Tripad deals with what I would describe as being one of the number one gripes from a candidate is feedback, and where am I in the process, and I can almost guarantee every HR switchboard gets inundated with where am I, have I got an interview, within the Tripad platform, as a candidate, you have a dashboard. It gives you an application status update. It prompts you if you haven't booked yourself in for interview. And this is essentially changing the candidate journey from being this candidate giving over information and waiting as actually a candidate self-serving and being able to log in, see where they are in the process, do any more actions that the company has asked them to do pre-interview, and within that allows them to see other opportunities within the organization and allows them to delve a little bit deeper into the organization as there's a knowledge library they can access from there as well. So I don't think you have to do anything massively innovative to give good candidate experience. I think communication comes at the top, and actually if you can communicate with your candidates and giving you tools to be able to do it effectively, so for example, you know, being able to send bulk email to a lot of people at once, you know, in Tripad you've got the ability to do that up to 10,000 people. There's no reason why somebody shouldn't be communicated with. Let's not all, yeah, I always talk about email, but let's not forget about the mobile experience. Being able to SMS a candidate from the platform is also key. The candidate being able to access their own the platform from their device, again, it's just giving that candidate accessibility and communication.
So when you, Lisa, consider your own future, right? When you're a contract recruiter, you really think about this. You're on your feet all the time, it's very important to work on your own retention as a provider of a service for your clients, right? So let's talk about you individually as a technologist, as a provider of service, as a business owner, a founder, when you consider your own future in this space, the recruitment, talent management, HR tech space, what are three key things that you do consistently or keep and bear in mind that will keep you where you are and keep you as a provider secure in that knowing that you are providing a great service and a product for your clients? What are the things that you do so that you do your own job better?
I think the day that I wake up and I'm not motivated to sit at my desk and do a good job is the day I should hang up my boots. But I think in terms of why I do a good job, and I believe I do, I'm very passionate about what I do and I believe in it. So as a recruiter, I need to believe in the product, whether that's technology or people or whatever. I think honesty and integrity go a very long way in this business. I'm from North Yorkshire, which is 200 miles north of London, and we're known as being pretty straight talking. And I think people like honesty, and they like to hear the bad and the good. If you're scared to say the bad, then you need to look at that. And I think that sticking your hand up when you mess up, everybody messes up, everybody makes mistakes. And if you face it head on, you're more likely to get a better result than just sitting there and trying to hide from it. So I think my clients especially like my straightforwardness. I think being able to speak to my clients on a level that they know about, i.e. I've done your job, so I get it. And there's the nuances in that as well, that somebody, I could write a list of the top 10 things as a HR tech provider you could say to clients to make them feel better. It will never hit it. It's actually, I've been there on a Friday night, and I've got people in interview on Monday morning. They've all just dropped out.
Right.
And I've got a terrier of a HR hiring manager breathing down my neck. I've got it, So I think I just think being very straight and being honest is a way that you can win.
Let's talk about that just a moment. Do you believe that being a practitioner, having been a practitioner, has really benefited your organization as a whole, that you bring that mindset to it? So many of the new technology companies out there that are serving any particular industry are doing so just based on a great idea, not having somebody in the helm or in a part of the driver's seat that's saying, hey, this is what our target client needs and goes through. Has it benefited you? It sounds like it has.
Yeah, I think so. And that's not just, I understand and I'm there and I'm patting them on the shoulder. Actually, this is more about this is about product, and this is about how things work. And the design team will come and show me something, and I'll just say, never in a million years is a recruiter going to do it like that. You need to think about this or whatever. So I think having been there, it does help from a product viewpoint. And I think what we've done is we've ended up building an ATS with a range of tools around it that actually, help as opposed to hinder. I'm not saying there are products out there that technologists have built, and there's some great products coming out. What we've managed to do is build a business through revenue and organic growth. It's privately owned. There's no funding. And I think a lot of that is attributed to the fact that, dare I say it, we're keeping it real.
Right. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. This show always goes so quickly. I like to pack as much information in as possible. And before we get to our quick hit list of faves, which is my favorite part of the show because it's selfish, I just love finding out people's favorite books and food and that kind of things. Do you have any last words of wisdom that you can provide?
Yeah, so hilarious that, you know, this is for North America. Cricket isn't particularly a well-known sport in the States, but if you Google it, you'll soon find out how bad England are at it. But my husband is an ex-cricketer, and we have a saying in our house, bat with a straight bat, and that basically goes back to the honesty and integrity and being straightforward. And I think if anybody takes that and uses that when they're thinking about running their business or even starting a business, I don't think you'll go far wrong if you bat with a straight bat.
I love that. Thank you for sharing that. That will be tweeted for sure, bat with a straight bat. So let's hit our quick faves. What's your favorite food?
Oh, Thai green curry, I think.
Ooh, that sounds delicious.
Yeah.
And do you make it yourself, or do you like...
Oh, very badly. Good. Yeah, I'm not a domestic goddess.
I am trying. I'm trying to cook. This is my year to learn new things.
I made
a mistake last night, and I failed miserably. But I'm not going to give up. I'm going to try again. So, and tuna's expensive to fail at. So I need to get good at it quickly. $13.99 a pound is hard to make a mistake when you're doing that. Your favorite book, and this could be a book you're reading right now, or maybe a book that's impacted your life.
I suppose one of my favorite books of all time, and this goes back to school, and I still every few years pick it up and read it, is George Orwell, 1984. It's an amazing book and interesting in terms of how things have sort of come to fruition. Some things have come to fruition in terms of maybe not so violent, but there's certainly things that I can see that have
pretty
come,
crazy.
Exactly.
Some of the things that are happening today are so 1984 or Fahrenheit 451, you know, or any of these sci-fi books that are out there that have been out there for years and years. Dick Tracy, I mean, the Apple Watch launch this week, it's just insane.
Yeah.
Your favorite place, and I like to tell my guests, this could be a room in your home, it could be a park close by or a beach, it could be a remote location that you like to go to vacation on. I know that you spend quite a bit of time with your kids and hanging out. I see wonderful pictures of you doing vacation time. And would that be one of your favorite places, or where would be your favorite place?
No, actually, really funnily, not. They weren't with me. I think one of my favorite places on earth is back of Blackcomb Mountain in Whistler. There's a run called Rock and Roll. And it's heart-stoppingly beautiful and generally empty, and the snow is to die for, and it's on the other side of the world to where I live, but it is an amazing place, and if I ever have a bad day, I think about that.
So is that your favorite? Did I lose you, Lisa?
Yeah, just a little bit.
Hello?
Sorry, Ryan. Hi.
Oh, there you go. That's okay. Is that your favorite thing to do, skiing, or is there something else that's your favorite thing to do? Skiing. Okay, great.
Yeah.
And do you snowboard or
do
you ski?
No, I'm a traditional skier. I'm on two planks. My kids ski as well, so it's a thing that we do as a family, and we love it. So it's a healthy sport, and it's slightly dangerous, which we like, and you get to see some amazing sights.
It has been such a pleasure to have you on the show, Lisa. You can find Lisa on Twitter at Lisa Scales, S-C-A-L-E-S. You can also follow TribePad at TribePad, and that's just TribePad. Is there another way that they can reach you, or is that the best way?
Tweet me. Yeah, find me on LinkedIn. I'm in most places.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you very much for inviting me, and I will hopefully speak to you soon.
That would be great. We'll be back next week as I continue my series on the UK connection. Matthew Jeffrey, who is the VP head of Global Sourcing and Employment Branding at SAP, will be joining me next week. And the following week, I have a bonus show with Ken Ward And on Thursday, we'll be back with Mike Taylor as we talk about the Global Mobile Recruitment Awards. It has been awesome today. Thanks again. I want to invite anybody that's interested in being a guest or being a part of the HR Latte Experience, or if you know somebody that would be a guest, I'm providing a series long months and would love to hit a new series. My April series will be about workforce management and all that it entails. So until next week, thank you for joining me today on HR Latte.